Welcome back into Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch with you, and I'm joined here in studio by Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter with the Chronicle-Telegram, the Medina Gazette, and of course you can read Scott's work as well at brownszone.com. Scott, as always, we appreciate you joining us, and a lot to talk about as far as the Browns are concerned, from the victory over the Bengals on Sunday, the drama that came along with it with Odell Beckham Jr., and then of course Baker Mayfield throwing the training staff under the bus, and oh yeah, by the way, I guess we should celebrate the fact that while it may not look realistic mathematically, the Browns are still alive in this playoff race.
They are. Yeah, it's good to be with you, Andy. A lot to digest. We can start with the playoff thing. 4-1 right over the last five games. That's been kind of lost, and part of it's because the schedule's gotten a lot easier, but that's still important, right? The Browns haven't gone 4-1 very often over the last decade, you know, maybe two or three times. So that's important. As Baker Mayfield said after the game, should be 5-0. And we'd feel a whole lot differently if they'd won in Pittsburgh. Playoff chances would look a whole lot better. But that didn't happen. The playoff chances are still hanging by a thread. And I think I saw 4% in one of the, you know, analytics studies. They need to win out, which means they go to Arizona this week. Home for Baltimore at Cincinnati. They need to win all three, get to 9-7, and then they need help. They need either Tennessee to win the AFC South and Houston to fall back to 9-7. You can't get Pittsburgh can't get to 10 wins along with Buffalo. Like, at least one other team has to stop at 9 wins, and only one team can get to 10 or more out of the whole wild card chase. So a lot has to go into it, but frankly, the hardest part is going 3-0. Because that includes a trip to Arizona and then a huge game against a Ravens team that hasn't lost since the Browns beat them in week 4.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting because I think there's so much hype and so much buildup to that game because, look, if the Browns were to win that game and then beat the Bengals, sure. Well, they would have lost just one game in divisional play. When was the last time that happened? And there's so
Never.
Many. Right.
It would be
right.
The best record inside the AFC North.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's crazy, too, to break down these little pockets of information, yep. Right? Because when you add all that up, you would sit there and think to yourself, man, this should be celebrated. But at the end of the day, the most amount of games they can win is 9.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that's a disappointment because technically that's an improvement over last year, but the bar was just set so incredibly high at the beginning of the year. Seems like the primary fall guy here would be Freddie Kitchens, and look, he shouldn't be free of any criticism, but a lot of times as a head coach, you face a lot of it, and you know he was at the forefront of it again on Sunday when he just didn't run the ball enough.
No, he did not, and the expectations are the backdrop for this whole season, and you're right. You know, Freddie quoted a stat the other day that Nick Chubb's leading the league in rushing, and they have two receivers on pace for 1,000 yards. Like, that's one thing you look at and go, man, that's impressive. But when you expected the team to be 10-6 or 11-5, whatever it was, and go to the playoffs, anything less is going to be disappointment, especially with the 2-6 start, which soured everybody on the season, and the Browns have been in such a hole that everything's colored through that 2-6 start. But when you get to Freddie, I mean, Freddie's had plenty of missteps in his rookie season as a head coach. The latest was the play calling against the Bengals. And Nick Chubb's the leading rusher in the league. And he got 3 carries in the first half against a Cincinnati run defense that was the worst in the NFL. It had let up 157.6 yards a game on the ground. And Nick Chubb ran 3 times and Kareem Hunt ran 3 times in the first half. Meanwhile, Baker Mayfield threw 2 interceptions. So it just didn't make any sense. And I'm not even a guy that, you know, I understand in today's NFL you need to pass the ball and you have to have chunk plays and be explosive. So I'm like the last to criticize a coach for not running the ball enough. He should have run the ball more. And it was so obvious. I'm screaming from the press box. Not in my head, I'm screaming. Why isn't he running the ball more? And then you know he knows he made a mistake because then they come out and run it like the first 5 plays of the third quarter, get down to the 3-yard line, throw an incompletion, and then run it in the end zone. And then Chubb comes out in the next drive and has 11-yard run. It was just so obvious. And the good part is eventually Freddie Kitchens figured it out, and that's the reason they won the game is because they ran it in the second half, but it shouldn't have taken that long to figure it out.
It took a while, but to his credit, like you mentioned, he made some adjustments at halftime and he fixed the problem. Boy, good thing or bad thing? When you take a look at the defensive performance on Sunday, yes, they surrendered over 170 yards on the ground, but you threw the stat at me earlier that in the red zone, that Browns defense performed extraordinarily well.
Yeah, 1-for-5. The Bengals were 1-for-5 in the red zone, and when it's an 8-point game, that's huge, right? You turn one of those field goals into a touchdown, and actually they stopped them once, and if they score there and go for two, we have a tie game or overtime or however it winds up playing out. Now, the Browns deserve credit. Larry Ogunjobi, I thought, played really well inside the 10. Especially, I mean, he played well all game, but he jumped out inside the 10. Joe Schobert made a touchdown-saving tackle at the 3, and they wound up holding the Bengals to a field goal. There were two huge spots in the game, both in the second half. The Bengals had first and goal from the 2, and instead of running it, Joe Mixon ran for 146 yards, I want to say, for the day. Instead of running it, Zach Taylor, another rookie coach and play caller, calls a pass, and Andy Dalton drops back, and he gets sacked. And instead of first and goal from the 2, it's second and goal from the 10, and it changes the whole dynamic of the drive. Incompletion, field goal. Fourth quarter, Browns are up 8. Bengals have first and goal from the 7. This time they run Mixon twice, and he picks up 3 yards. So it's third and goal from the 4. And you know it's 4-down territory. They're going to go for it on fourth down. On third down, Dalton drops back, and the Browns blitz, and he throws it away. And on fourth down, they call a quarterback draw. Now, you can argue whether or not they should have kicked the field goal and got within 5. There's enough time left in the game, 7 minutes, I want to say. But they said, no, we're going to go for it. And the quarterback draw had worked at least once in the game. But I don't like that call from the 4. Zach Taylor, the coach, and Dalton both said it was the right call. They just didn't execute. Maybe the Browns figured it out because the ends collapsed the pocket and did not let Dalton run right up the middle. But so the Browns did a good job, and they deserve credit. But if you're a Bengals fan, you look at it and go, man, why is our coach calling these plays down there? Not putting his team in the best position to win, in my opinion. And that was the story of the game, right? It was Browns running the ball in the second half and the Bengals' failure to score in the red zone changed from what would have been a really disappointing loss for the Browns, like the kind of loss that might get your coach fired, to Browns are 4-1, still clinging to those playoff hopes.
You talked about Joe Schobert a few moments ago. I want to bring him back up. He really is having a Pro Bowl caliber season. Yep. There's no doubt about that. And he made the comments earlier this week talking about how he's not had any discussions with the Browns about a possible contract extension. Are you surprised at all to hear that? You think that's a negotiating tactic on his behalf? Or do you think maybe the Browns still need to see more from him before giving him more money and more years?
I'm shocked. I'm shocked by it, Andy. And it's not like Joe just had one good game, you know. To me, he's had 3 good seasons in a row. And, you know, he's a Pro Bowler after the 17 season. And at the time, I was like, it seemed like a stretch. I didn't think he played great. I thought he played better last year. He was banged up a little bit, had a hamstring. But overall, I thought, he played better. And this year, I thought he's played even better than those 2 years. And he's a good locker room guy. He's a smart guy, works hard, wants to be here. I don't think you have a natural replacement on the roster. I know they drafted Sione Takitaki in the 3rd round to play middle linebacker. I know he's physical, Takitaki is. I don't think he runs like Schobert, and I think in today's NFL, those linebackers have to be able to run and cover and stay with the tight end and stay with the running back and fill the middle of the field. And I just haven't seen enough out of Takitaki to be comfortable that he can do that. And if you're expecting to make a leap next year, which this team will be, you can't give away your best players. And Joe Schobert's one of your best players. And I think the Browns have enough salary cap space. I get that there will be decisions to make regarding who gets the money and who doesn't. I think Schobert deserves it. Now, maybe the Browns were waiting to see what the Shaq Thompson deal was in Carolina to kind of set the market. And he signed a 4-year, $52 million deal Saturday. So it's $13 million a year, which kind of falls into what I thought Schobert would get. It would be a top 6 or 7 contract for inside linebackers in the league. But, to answer your question, I'm stunned that they haven't at least offered him something. And I think it would be negligent if the Browns don't try to keep Joe Schobert. So I'd be disappointed if there aren't at some point talks to try to keep him. And why not get it done before the end of the season? There's no time like the present. Once the season's over, all of a sudden the potential free agents see free agency beckoning. They know the dollars are out there, and there's a disconnect from the team. Your best odds of re-signing him are by getting it done while he's still in the locker room every day.
Again, we're talking with Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter with the Chronicle-Telegram, the Medina Gazette, and, of course, BrownZone.com. Well, we certainly can't wrap up without at least addressing the Odell Beckham Jr. situation, because it's really taken on a life of its own. And, you know, I think a lot of us maybe saw it getting to this point. Yeah. And I think what disappoints Browns fans is the idea that you guys, when you talked to the other day, he had every opportunity to dispel those rumors about all we'd heard about how other teams have talked to him or other people in the league have talked to him, and he threw the idea out there, come get me. Didn't really decide to squash that. He just kind of left it open, and I think that has a lot of people really concerned.
And I think they should be. He's had multiple chances to shut this down over the last 5-6 days, and he's chosen not to. And to me, that's deliberate. I think it's worrisome. I don't think that means the Browns should give up on him. I think they should work to find a resolution where Odell's comfortable coming back for year two and wants to be back. I think Odell is a thoughtful guy. I think he's a smart guy. I think you can talk, quote-unquote, common sense with him and make your argument and have him understand where the Browns organization is coming from. And I don't think he's burned any bridges yet. And I'm not sure he's the kind of guy that would burn bridges. I think he's the kind of guy that kind of likes the idea of flirting with other teams and keeping his options open and likes the speculation and the drama and being the center of attention. And I think what has happened over the last few days has played into that. But it would have been nice to just hear him say, yes, I want to be back next year. I like it here. And he hasn't. And he didn't say that. And I get why that would trouble the Browns fans and be concerned for the organization, but I don't think it's reached a critical mass yet where a decision has to be made or the Browns feel they need to trade him. But it's definitely a situation that needs to be monitored moving forward.
And you mentioned the easy answer would have been, hey, that didn't happen. Yes, I want to be here next year. But then again, nothing has been easy about this team this year. There's no question about that. And look, on Sunday, you can ignore the record to some degree. It won't be easy going to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. A lot of great storylines surrounding this game for the Browns. It's their second-to-last road game of the season. And as of right now, it's their last 4 o'clock kick of the season as well. So this game on Sunday against the Cardinals will not be short of storylines either.
No, and the first one is it's a must-win, right? We talked about it. If they're going to keep these playoff hopes alive until that huge matchup with Baltimore, December 22nd, then you need to win in Arizona. It's as simple as that. And then we're going to watch the quarterbacks. Not that we don't always watch the quarterbacks, but especially this week, they're the last two number one overall picks in the draft. Baker Murray in 18, Kyler Murray in 19. Both went to Oklahoma. Both won Heisman trophies, right? Murray won the Heisman trophy, right?
Yep.
So let's see how they battle. Let's see how they go head-to-head. And I think Baker Mayfield paved the way for Kyler Murray to be the number one pick in the draft, because he's only 5'10 and a half, and Baker's only 6 foot and a half an inch. And those type of quarterbacks were never drafted number one overall. Michael Vick was the outlier, and he was maybe the freakish athlete ever to play quarterback in this league until Lamar Jackson. So Baker's not a freak athlete, but the Browns trusted him enough to take him number one in 18. And I think how he played as a rookie, setting the NFL rookie record with 27 touchdown passes, leading the Browns from 0-16 to 7-8-1, gave the Cardinals franchise the confidence to take an even more undersized quarterback with the first pick and say, we can win in this league with a guy like Murray. Now, he's had his ups and downs this year, but I think he's played pretty well overall. I don't think they're having a lot of second guesses, a lot of doubts in Arizona. So you got to watch your quarterbacks. And then you got to keep a little bit eye on Baker Mayfield versus Cliff Kingsbury, the first-year coach in Arizona. They have a history at Texas Tech. It did not end well. I think they've mended fences, but I want to hear what Baker has to say about it this week.
Should be an interesting matchup on Sunday. Scott, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Andy. Anytime, bud.
Hey. If you like what you hear here, by the way, Scott and I do have a podcast that we run weekly over at brownzone.com, so you can check that out weekly. Again, that's at brownzone.com for the Zone Coverage Podcast. We're going to step aside and take a break. When we come back, we've got more coming your way here on Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.